Formula Access. Today we have a really special guest. Yes, I say that every single time. Today's guest is Erica Hoffman of Formula Woman. You guys, by far, you've probably seen the teasers, you've probably seen the snippets, but she is quite frankly one of the funnest interviews that I've had, where I've laughed, I've learned, I've been encouraged. You guys, she has a story of such humble beginnings that all of us normal people could appreciate her story. She watched Formula One races on VHS. She couldn't afford to race, so she got a job and funded it herself. You guys, this is a story of a normal person with big ambitions and big goals and went for something that seemed insurmountable and won the Formula Woman competition and is now racing professionally. So you guys, seriously, you will laugh, you will be encouraged, you will enjoy yourself through this. Grab a cup of coffee, grab a cup of tea, whatever we do worldwide to enjoy a podcast. This one is worth your time. Enjoy. Formula Access, welcome. This is where we bring the people of motorsports to your doorstep. And today we have another really special guest. I keep finding all these people. And as I've told you before, I am on a constant challenge to find drivers because they are some of the most interesting, high performing people out there. And when they agree, we get them on the show and we build them up. So today we've got a really, really special guest straight from Formula Women and GT Cup. Today we've got Canadian Erica Hoffman. Erica, welcome.
Thanks. So good to be here.
Thank you for responding to my request and working with both of our really busy schedules and making this happen.
Yeah, no, excited to be here. I honestly, like, the first time you messaged me, I was like, is this a scam? And then I had to, like, look you up, and then I was like, okay, this guy's legit. We can have a call.
So about that, you're one of, like, I don't know, I think I have 30 recorded episodes right now, and like 28 of them have all said the same thing. And this not being my day job, my LinkedIn profile where I kind of do all this is geared towards my tech company. Mm-hmm. And like just in the experience it has this, and I was like, you know, I really need to like change this up a little bit so people know that I understand motorsports and not so much tech. And so I changed it all, and that's kind of stopped. But I got that a lot when this started out, and they all come on and they're like, yeah, I thought it was a scam. And then I thought, well, I'll just respond back. And then you had the show links in there. And
yeah, exactly. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Once you like find the website and stuff, you're like, this looks cool.
I'm a real person. I try to be. I get cool people on you, like you on the show, then, you know, I get the credibility that I need, and you guys accept much better. So I appreciate it. So our audience used to be almost exclusively U.S. And it has basically become U.S., Canada, Europe, and Australia. So just to let the audience know, who are you and what do you do?
So my name is Erica. I'm Canadian, and this past year I raced a McLaren 570S GT4 in the British GT Cup Championship. So I race in England, after I won this international driver search. So pretty much I won Formula Woman, which was this competition, which took 1,000 female drivers from 35 different countries. There's multiple rounds of competing, and I ended up winning, which, not gonna lie, kind of shocked myself. I was like, obviously I wanted to win, but I, based on my experience level comparatively to other drivers in the competition, I was like, oh, it's not super realistic, but I'll like get as much as I can out of this competition. And then I ended up winning, and then within a week was told, like, pack your bags, move to the UK, and I raced in the GT Cup Championship this past year.
How did that go?
It was good. It was a whirlwind, definitely a dream come true. And like just a crazy series of events to get me to where I am today. Like definitely in my head, what I'm doing now is like was my dream that I always wanted to do, but I thought it was gonna take a lot longer. I wasn't sure how on earth I would actually make it happen. I was like, okay, if I get to race like GT4 at any level, maybe even like one race once, that would be fantastic. And then all of a sudden I was like, here's a McLaren GT4, this is your season, like, and next year I'm also racing GT4 in the UK. So it was definitely like I don't always believe it's real. I'm gonna be real with you right now. Like sometimes I'm like, did that actually happen? Is this realistic? Because it's just kind of disjointed in terms of like my previous trajectory within racing and like the steps I was making to all of a sudden be landed to where I am now, was like kind of unprecedented.
Is this like your first year?
Yeah. So pretty much, do you want the story? Okay. Pretty
Yeah,
much.
okay, yeah, just go.
Okay.
Give me
All
the
right.
origin story. I was gonna do it later, but it's a good time.
It's
Go.
kind of like, okay, sorry, wrecking the schedule.
Good. You're my kind
Okay,
of people.
so life story. Pretty much growing up, always loved racing, thought it was super cool, but was not like connected to it at all. Like my family watched Formula One. We actually like didn't even get Formula One on our TV. My uncle did. So we'd take a VHS tape, put it in his mailbox, he'd record the race and then put it in our mailbox and we'd watch it like Monday, Tuesday, and then put it back into his mailbox and just like re-record over the same VHS tape. And that was like our only access.
Oh, how, oh, this is super uncomfortable for me to ask, but like, how old are you?
I'm 26.
And you know about VHS?
Yeah, well, we were running on a budget back in the day. So pretty much we had a VHS tape and that's what we used because nobody else watched Formula One. There wasn't any way to get it really. Like my uncle had this like crazy setup where he had to use like all these satellite dishes to like get some European channel because we didn't have anything. And like we didn't have to worry about spoilers because like nobody I knew watched any kind of racing. I would say like Formula One and nobody even knew what I was talking about growing up. So like I liked it but was like so disconnected from it, knew no one involved, didn't have the money to do any karting or anything, and my family was kind of like didn't even know that that was kind of an option. And then found out like, oh, you can like go karting in Quebec, but like that's expensive, like all this stuff. So pretty much like liked racing but was so disconnected from it. And then as I got older and I got my driver's license, I was like, okay, like I really want to like actually drive. Like driving down the street, cool, but like I need to experience like real driving. And so ended up doing like an autocross event, and then taking like our Hyundai Accent to a racetrack in Canada, and me and my dad went for like a track day in this like low like roll down window like gutless little thing. But I was loving life. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm on a racetrack. And then later on, I ended up buying a Subaru BRZ, and I took that to the track and just did like a local. Pretty much what I ended up doing was I like emailed the track and I was like, hello, my name is Erica. I would like to drive. I have no idea how to get involved in any kind of motorsports or anything. So they were like, okay, come on down. We'll like meet you. And I ended up doing this like race kind of lapping school thing that they had, even though I was like not experienced enough for it. They were like, well, we'll let you take it, it's okay. And then through that I did like their local series. They had like this like local racing series with your like daily driver that would happen like I think like 9 nights during the summer. So I did that. And then sorry, now I'm there was a gap because of certain events. So I'm trying to avoid. Okay, so I was just
Every
gonna say.
guest that I've ever had on the show will know what you're talking about. Just keep going. You're
Okay,
good.
so in 2019 I did that and then had a bit of a dead zone there. And then pretty much after, I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time flawlessly stringing this together.
You're doing
But then
great.
in 2021, I was working for this driver development company that does like simulator work and stuff in Ottawa, my hometown. called Apex V2R, and they told me about this Formula Woman competition. And they were like, they're gonna let some like non-professional, because the thing about Formula Woman is it's trying to get just raw talent into motorsports. So their approach was like, okay, what are some of the limitations that hold women back from motorsports? How can we just find like raw talent, good drivers? So you had to be a non-professional driver to be able to enter. And so they were like, they're letting some amateur drivers race McLarens. And they're like, you should give it a go and enter this competition. And I was like, they're gonna let someone like just drive a McLaren? I was like, sweet. I was like, sign me up. And so I entered this competition with barely any understanding of what it was. I'm not gonna lie. I was like, okay, this thing in England. And what I ended up doing was I did around here in Canada at a karting track. We had like written tests, go-karting, fitness, media tests, those kind of things. And then off of my scores on that, I made the top 75. So then early this year, so in March of 2022, I went to the UK to compete in the final. And so we went from 75 after 2 days of like simulator tests, karting, media test, cognitive. They did all these like psych evaluations on us and like your mental ability to like compare to like world champions or successful athletes and all this stuff. They were like, how's your resilience? How's all these, like, how do you problem solve? Like all these things, reaction tests, all these tests. And then we went down to 15, and then they put me on a bus to go to another racetrack. So then we went up north to Croft Circuit, did like a shootout for the top 10 times, moved on to the final 10. And then we went to Sweden, which is at the point in this competition where I was like, whoa, I did not think I was going to make it this far. This is sick. I was like, somebody's flying me out to Sweden to like drive cars in a frozen lake. I was like, this is the dream. I was like, this is me living my little Top Gear fantasy right now, like just getting to do cool things. So then I was kind of in the mindset throughout the whole competition. I was like, okay, everyone was getting like pretty stressed about the whole situation, because it was like, when do you ever have a shot like this? When is it ever the odds that like, I went from driving my street car at a local track to potentially having a ride in a GT4 car. And I didn't really have any other options. It wasn't like other people were seeking me out to drive for them before. So there was like a lot of pressure, but in my head I was like, okay, if I do win, the pressure is only going to get bigger and bigger as you level up within motorsports. And then I was also like, this is the coolest thing. I don't want to get myself so stressed out that I miss out on the joy of like getting to enjoy seat time and being behind the wheel. And I also know that I drive the best when I'm loose and relaxed and like having fun and focused on just driving and not focused on outcome. That's another thing. Like, obviously as an athlete, you want to be in the zone. You want to be focused in the present and not like worried about results or this or that and the other thing. So I really tried to really focus in on enjoying the experience. So, obviously still trying hard, was a lot of pressure, but I was like, let's live in the moment. So when we were in Sweden, we were just like drifting around on this frozen lake, and pretty much the mentality of that was they wanted to see how quickly you could adapt to a different driving style and different instruction. And pretty much their thought process was, we want to see who can learn the quickest, who's the best at following instruction, because you're going to be thrown into like something that's another like four levels up. So you need to be able to take coaching really well and quickly adapt and have a good natural feel of the car. So then we did a bunch of tests. We had new judges and stuff. They would change the judges, so it was like unbiased. And then the next day, so we did all of our like testing on the ice for a full day, and then the next morning they like sat us down to tell us our results, and they brought us in one by one and sat us down with Mia Fluitt, who drives a McLaren, and then Graham Glew, who is the founder of Formula Woman. And at this point they hadn't told us, like, we were doing like stuff on the ice and I didn't know what a good time on the ice was. Like, they didn't tell us like how long it would take to go through a course or anything like that. So pretty much what they did is they just told me my time, which meant absolutely nothing to me because I had no idea what to compare it against. So I was like, okay. And they were kind of waiting for a reaction from me. And I was like, this, you could tell me like any number right now, it would not make any difference to me. And then they were like, so you were the fastest. And I was like, oh. But then at the same time, I knew they were taking in a lot of factors. It wasn't just speed. It was obviously that plays a big part, but it was all these other pieces to be like, how could you develop? So I like, again, was kind of like, I don't know what this means. And then they were like, so, and you made the team. And then I was like, what? And I freaked out. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, it was something that I don't think I'd fully allowed myself to like believe it. I was like kind of still guarding myself in terms of, I hoped and I wanted it, but in that moment it really sunk in and I like started to get like misty eyed. I was like, oh my gosh, is this real life? I was freaking out. And then I immediately like called my family and it was 3 a.m. Canada time. And my brother lives in Papua New Guinea. So it was also like crazy time for him. I like called the group chat and they picked up on like the first ring. Everyone was awake in the middle of the night. It was like, what's happening? And I was like, I made the team. And they were like, we knew you would, Erica. And I was like, well, I didn't know I would, but thank you. And then I started racing a McLaren. So it was a very big, weird, disjointed jump into my now race car driver life.
That to me is, I'm a huge advocate in motorsports of having a meritocracy and having the best people doing the highest level of work. So the best engineers, the best aero people, the best chassis people, you know, the best drivers, and not necessarily like socioeconomic status is mm-hmm. determining what you do. And I think the thing I love most about your story is that like, you can't even watch a race without a VHS player, which is 30 some odd years old. I mean, they probably stopped using VHS in the normal world before yeah. you were born. And like, you are like, you come from humble meanings, but you're also like extremely grateful for what you have. So it's not like, yeah, I'm top 75, I'm top 10. And now mm-hmm. I won this thing, you know, whatever. You're very, very humble about, just this particular journey. And I think that's special because you don't have the billionaire story of, you know, I liked racing. My dad spent money. My dad bought track time. My dad bought me a go-kart. My dad bought me, you know, a seat at a Formula 4 team or, you know, mm-hmm. a GT team. It was, I became an adult and I got a job and I had to buy a car and I went to the track and I had to do all this stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that's a sweet story. Like, I think that's probably more connecting with the world than the other of that. So but I'm also really impressed by the structure of that system. I think that in that world of resources and, you know, and wealth, you lose all those things like media training, you know, can you react to what's happening on the track in real time and avoid, you know, a catastrophic event? You know, you always see the drivers with the tennis balls and whatnot. Like, can you do that? And then you just hop into a car and you win a competition traveling across the world. I'm actually really impressed with that. I'm really impressed with you even more than I was when I had no idea what you did. So.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. No, I appreciate that. And yeah, I think like I'm pretty fortunate to be in the position I'm in, to have that opportunity. Obviously, like I was a girl, so they like, it was a competition for women. So I got that opportunity, but, yeah, it's been such a dream come true and something that I don't take for granted at all. I think I've built my confidence as I've gone along. So at the start, I had less confidence in myself because I was also seeing all these other drivers who had all this experience, and that was very intimidating, especially as someone who didn't, I like love driving. I have a lot of natural talent and ability for it, but it's hard to really have that confidence in yourself when you haven't seen yourself, your results against other people. You know, like I was kind of like, oh, I love this, but like, it's hard to gauge. But as I've gone on and as I kept winning different rounds of the competition and then ended up winning and then race this past year and was like on pace immediately, we didn't have that much testing time, but we ended up, me and my teammate Jody Sloss, who is the other winner, who raced in my car, we were like mid-pack throughout the season. We were getting better every race by like a substantial amount. And it was encouraging to be like, okay, we're racing against people who've been doing this for years and years and years. And we're like climbing up every race. We're getting better and better. We're passing people. We're doing all this stuff, even with such limited seat time, to all of a sudden be in a GT4 car. So as it's gone on, I've gained a lot more confidence and self-belief, and also been like, okay, like before I was like, I don't know if I can do this because I'm less experienced. And now I'm like, okay, I should, like, yeah, I'm less experienced, but I'm still performing. So that means that I should have more and more. It gives me a different confidence in a sense, because I'm like, okay, that means my ability should just increase as I get more practice and seat time. Whereas before I was like insecure about it. Now I'm like, okay, well, it just means that like I should just be getting better because I'll be given more and more seat time. And then, yeah, the goal is to continue racing and to keep performing and get to that top level.
Did you get better when you could compare yourself? Because I know when you have nothing to compare yourself against, mm-hmm. you know, with lap times or other drivers, you know, I think there's a trade-off. I do a karting competition with my son every year, and like he will take me out and I'll chase him to find the racing line and the brake zones, and I'm like right behind him and a half a second off, and it's like demoralizing for me because I'm like, I can beat him, you know? I have yeah. beat him before, you know, and I'm like right there, and I'm a half a second off his time, and like it almost kind of wears you out. For me, I'm like, well, where is that half a second at? Mm-hmm. But I think for most people it could be like, well, I just can't find it and I give up. It's probably right. not a racer's mentality, but
yeah, no, I think it like it inspires you to like work harder and try harder, and also know like in a certain sense it's easy to gain a lot at the start, and then it's those final tens that take forever to get. But I'm in a good position. I work with my teammate Jody a lot, and we tend to like have different strengths and weaknesses, so it's easy to overlay our data and everything, and we really have a really great team mentality. We're meant to be paired together for the next few years with the Formula Women program, so we're working together long term. So that's been helpful, and we have coaches and everything, and it's also like at this point, every race we improved so much, and my performance improved so much, and I learned so much, because realistically it was like my first like legit actual race was like sitting on a grid in a GT4 car with like a Mercedes GT3 behind me because he was out of position. I was like, oh my gosh, I was like, this is my first like real start, like, and here I am. I was like, let's not crash into anyone. So I think we're still at the point where like it was encouraging because I could see like drastic improvement every time. And also like I'm at the point where I, as a driver, I know that there's so much for me to improve on, and every session I do improve so much that I'm not at that like limit yet where it's like frustrating and I'm just grinding for like thousands of seconds. Like I'm still in the upper trajectory of like, okay, got that, like moving up. So it's still an encouraging phase of my career right now.
So you, in GT, like, explain that ladder system to me. Like, how you, the GT3, GT4, like, mm-hmm. what does that ladder system look like until you get to, I don't know, the equivalent of the top?
Right. So, GT4 is what I race right now. And then the GT3 is, like, a level above that. But GT3 is going to be, like, racing at Le Mans and everything. So it's still quite high. And in terms of, like, sports car racing, like closed wheel, you know, that's kind of the traditional sense. You do GT4, GT3, and then if you wanted to move up, you'd go into like prototypes and LMP3 and stuff like that. So my goal would be to race GT4 for this next season, potentially the season after that, and then eventually move up to GT3. So GT3 is faster, more aero, just like a different way of driving. You're just, you have different aids that are taken away and stuff. So goal would be to get to GT3 at one point. It's a lot faster, unfortunately, like a lot more expensive, but depending on how the process goes and what sponsorship and stuff we can bring in, our long-term goal with Formula Women would be to race at Le Mans with a GT3 car. a few years down the line. And their goal is to do the first fully female run team to go to Le Mans, which would be a historic thing. We've had women drivers, we've had women lineups of drivers, but not like full engineers and all that stuff. So they're looking at wanting to do that. And to even be able to say like, oh yeah, like the goal, if things work out and like they have those things in place, is that I'd race at Le Mans, is like pretty out there to say in terms of what I was doing like last year and everything. So even to have that possibility is quite a lot of hope, and very much like, is this real life? Is this happening? Like, I'm just going to keep grinding and like working to improve as a driver. But it's pretty exciting to see what could potentially be down the road.
Do you, in that system, I mean, does it follow in GT4, GT3, are your sponsors paying for your seat?
Yeah. So right now, Formula Woman paid for our seat this past year, and they're going to pay for it moving forward. I have to work on personal sponsorship stuff. So obviously I had to move to England to go race this past year, so I couldn't work in England being Canadian and with like visas and everything. So my bank account is not in the greatest shape right now, but that's okay. That happens with racing.
Is that what this sponsorship is for, is to cover your travel, yeah, living?
Exactly. So that I, okay, like am not destitute while trying to be a race car driver. And then
also, by the way, they're all destitute.
Yeah, no, it's brutal. You go to a track, everyone's like, ah, spent all my money. So goal would be to get personal sponsors is what I'm working on right now. And me and my teammate are working on, also to round out our testing program a bit more. So there's certain testing that is covered through like the team's budget, but especially being new to motorsport, we want more time on track, right? We want to get more seat time, more coaching, and just have that experience. And then, so having budget go towards that is like what I'm working on with personal sponsors, is to just cover my expenses, travel expenses, gear, and then more seat time.
Are you, being in a McLaren, are you backed by McLaren? I mean, do they?
Yeah, so this past year they supplied our cars for us, but this next year we're probably going to be in a different GT4 car. It depends. There's different talks going on, so it depends what manufacturer wants to back it. But pretty much last year McLaren gave us our cars, which was fantastic of them, but because economically right now they didn't have as much backing as they originally thought to be able to give us, we had the cars, but we didn't have like a huge testing program by them or anything. It was pretty much, we had the cars and then we ran with a customer team, which was still, obviously we got the cars, it was great, but the goal to be moving forward would be have a fuller testing program, fuller development program, just get more seat time, because in comparison to other drivers who we're competing against, we do not have the seat time that they do, and they're already coming in with like years and years of experience versus us. So but you have to just use that in terms of, okay, I got to use my off-track time well. Like, I need to mentally prepare well. I need to be on the sim. I need to be in a proper headspace. So we do a lot of, like, mental performance coaching, that kind of thing. And just making sure that any time you do get to be on track, it counts. Because as it goes up, and I've seen with different drivers, as they're more and more successful, sometimes they get less and less track time, right? You get thrown into a car, you're like, okay, do a few laps, all right, now race, you know? So you have to be at that level where you can just jump in and perform well.
Who are the other manufacturers that kind of enter that arena?
So on grid with us, we were racing against Aston Martins, Lamborghinis, Audi, Porsche. Obviously, we were in a McLaren this past year. Mercedes... I've kind of lost the list of what I've said so far, but like just kind of that world of like high-end fancy cars. And people move in and out of it all the time. So like Lotus just is releasing their GT4 car for this next year, so they're moving into it. And then Audi obviously is moving towards F1, so they're pulling out of their sports car stuff a little bit more. And then you have... Yeah, your big players like Porsche, Mercedes, just just always like kind of doing their thing.
You need to connect with Lance. I'm sorry, Lawrence Stroll.
People have told me that. They're like, you're Canadian. You should know each other.
And they own Aston Martin.
Yeah. So if he wants to give me a car to drive, obviously I'm on board. I personally am not friends with him, so don't have that much of a connection, but we'll see. Well,
I had their head of North America on my show, and he is a unbelievable human, and I'll send you his email address.
Perfect. Fantastic. Thanks,
he's a good guy. He's a good guy.
I appreciate it.
North America, including Canada. So
fantastic.
Us Americans, we get all confident. We're like, North America is America. But it's not. And he told me that. So.
Oh, yeah.
That's exciting. I mean, that I don't fully understand that world other than, you know, I've been to IndyCar races where, you know, their supercars and the GT cars are at the track, you know, in a support series. And they're fascinating because you take a supercar and $1 million car and you throw $1 million worth of cool stuff on it. And, you know, it's like Fast and the Furious for rich people.
Yeah, and, it's pretty sick. Honestly, what? Just being at the track, like the first time I rocked up to like a GT Cup weekend, first off, you have everyone's like supercars in the paddock, which they drove to the track in. And then you have their souped up supercar race cars, which are now like all the comfort's gone, but they're like monsters of machines. And I was like, what is this world? I was like, this is the dream. This is so cool. This is a step up for me changing my street tires to my track tires and my BRZ with my dad. Now we're in a different playing field right now.
Going back to that, mm-hmm. how impactful has your dad been in this journey? I mean, does he kind of hand you off to Formula Women and go? I mean, I have a daughter and I don't know if I could ever let her go to Europe, but like how has this been on your relationship? Like, are you a daddy's girl?
Yeah, I okay. think like in total, like I have a really strong relationship with my whole family. So, both of my parents, my mom and dad, have been really supportive, and I wouldn't be where I am without them, because they're just like such good people, right? So even though they didn't know motorsports well, obviously my dad was stoked. He was like, "This is the coolest thing ever," because he always loved racing but didn't know how to get into it. And honestly, my mom's like into it so much as well, and she totally would have driven back in the day if she kind of did. She had a Honda Prelude and like got a lot of speeding tickets, but like
I had one too. I get that.
No way.
Yeah nice. That's how old I am.
So they're very supportive, and just like having their emotional support and their just like general wisdom and like counsel in terms of just all the stuff I've had to deal with this past year, especially going from like all of a sudden you're competing at a high level. There's a lot of scrutiny. There's a lot of people you've beat. So there's a lot of like, okay, you better perform now. Unfortunately, there's like some misogyny there of people being like, okay, these random girls, they don't belong here. So you have to prove yourself and kind of go against people who obviously don't want you there. And then there's like the politics side of things, the sponsorship, the marketing, the finance, the all of a sudden moving to another country. So it was quite a learning curve of a year. But my parents were really supportive. And then my family, my sister, actually came with me when I did the Formula Woman competition, when I had to go over to the UK, because I don't know, I didn't have the most confidence in me winning. So I was like, okay, if I lose, then we can just go travel a bit and it's still fun. And I got to drive a bit. It was great. And then I just kept winning and it kept being like, okay, I got to stay another week. Okay. I got to stay this. And finally she was like, yo, I'm going to go visit my friends like in Switzerland. Like, I'm tired of waiting around for you. Like, call me once you win and we'll go home. They've all been really supportive, and my whole family came when we raced at Silverstone this past year, which was just such a surreal experience, and I love them so much, and they're such good quality people, and they have made such a difference in my life, and we're very close, and I couldn't be where I am without them. As much as they're not, like, they don't know the whole racing world, they know people, and they know, like, my mom and dad give me a lot of, like, character advice, and, like, you know, just
general you take it?
Wisdom. Yeah, I trust them. They're pretty good.
Sorry, I have teenagers, so I always ask, like, you know, I can show you all these landmines in life, like, to avoid. And they're just like, yeah, we just want to find, we want to make our own mistakes. And I'm like, yeah. Why?
Well, I think to a part of it, like, that is true, but, like, I'm also at the point now where, like, I'll come to them with problems, right? And, like, we discuss it together. And it's not as much them telling me what to do. It's more us, like, you know, having a conversation, and they know me so well, and they understand the complexity of the situation I've been put in, with all of a sudden being thrust into this new world and this new life. So they're stoked for me, and they're also very supportive, and they've pushed me when I need to be pushed, and are there if I need, like, you know, just some comfort or something. So they're pretty great.
And you said this a second ago, do you feel like there's misogyny, like, or do you just feel like they're terrified of you? Because I'm Italian, so I have always, my wife is an extremely independent, strong woman, and I have to have that around me. And she terrifies me because she is just like, and not in a bad way, but she's just, you know, very driven. She's mm-hmm. very good at what she does. When she sees something, it's like, it's almost like that motherly instinct. Like, it doesn't matter what happens to a mom or a mother. Like, they will literally move heaven and earth for their child. Mm-hmm. I think guys say they'll do that and try to do that, but, like, a mom just naturally does it. And I just, like, I see those same characteristics, like, even in my daughter. Like, when she wants something or she sets a goal, like, there's nothing that stops her from doing that. And I think, to me, that's probably what's happening, is, like, they're terrified of, like, wow, she has never raced and she just won this thing. Like, I'm scared and I better beat her or whatever it is. But, I mean, I think naturally any negativity in the world is generally driven by fear. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably what you see. And then in, you know, the world of complicated world of motorsports, I'm sure there's a lot of, I don't know, a lot of douchebags out there doing, you know, stupid things, but whatever.
Yeah.
I think what you're doing is awesome. I think I still believe in a meritocracy in motorsports. And I think if you're, you know, woman, man, white, black, whatever, like, just, can we please put the fastest, most talented people out on the track and let us fans be entertained by that and not anything else involved?
Yeah, no, I would agree. I want us to get to the point where it's not like, oh, she's like a girl race car driver, but just be like, oh, they're a race car driver. You know, it's not like such a rare thing or such a talked about thing. Like, it just matters how you drive. And I think, like, I appreciate what you're saying in terms of, like, you know, gassing me up a little with them being, you know, intimidated by us coming to the field. And I do see what you're saying in a sense of, like, if, yeah, it's something new and it's another competition and everything. And I'd like to say, as, like, a blanket statement, first off, like, a lot of people in motorsport are fantastic. And I definitely think, like, I haven't experienced, like, brutal, like, judgment or anything. Like, I've had a lot of people who support me. And I also think there's kind of like an age thing. A lot of the younger drivers are pretty, they're more accepting to female drivers. They don't really see it as like a weird thing. They're like, yeah, you go. They're my friends. They're chill. Yeah. And I think also once you prove yourself, it definitely changed. So before we did our first race, there was a lot of murmurs. There was a lot of stuff getting back to us. A lot of people doubting, a lot of people being like, they shouldn't be in this position. And yeah, just a lot of judgments and a lot of people like questioning what we were doing. And then after we were like racing and performing, a lot of that died down. So a lot of it, once you like can perform on track and you can show like, okay, you belong to be here. You actually like, you deserve to be here. Like, it makes sense. You're performing well. Then it definitely, like, a lot of that gets quieted down. And I think that's just more what needs to happen, is like you see more and more different people doing well, then it becomes less of a like, oh, they're different, and more of just like, oh yeah, they're just another driver.
But you and your teammate beat the guys on track, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Then you deserve to be there, and it should just be that simple, right?
Thanks. That's what we hope. And like, definitely sees that, like, you know, there is progress being made, and there's so many more girls coming into the sport than used to be. And so, yeah, it's encouraging to see the tide kind of shifting a bit.
I agree. I honestly, like, outside of the fear piece of it, I think the structure of creating these pathways, because I mean, I've had Tatiana Calderon, I've had Abby Eaton, I've had a couple of, you know, drivers, and like, these are talented people, rightly so. Jamie Chadwick, I have not had her on the show, but like, I followed her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think there is one kind of resounding challenge is like, they can't raise sponsor dollars for mm-hmm. the seat. It's not like, do you suck at driving and you just want to be there because you're a woman? It is really, you know, you understand it. It takes money. You know, my son races a local kart league because I'm not going to spend $50,000 a year to be in a higher level league. Like, it just not going to happen. And so, but if there was a sponsor around to cover that, that would change things. And I think that that's, to me, has always been the challenge of like the W Series being a great platform and a great concept, but not an actual solution to a problem, because there's no feed from that series into where all of these women actually want to be, which is in Formula One, or at least in competition for those seats. And mm-hmm. they've like pulled them apart. Whereas like what you're doing has been, to me, really well thought out, which is like, let's just go pull all these people in here. Let's support them. Let's teach them all of the things that they need to be. Let's see where they're at today. Teach them a little bit more, and then provide them this benchmark to then drop them in with everyone else mm-hmm. and see how they do. And I'm actually really impressed. I think those people should be involved in some other series. So,
oh, thanks.
A little shout out to the founders there. They need to.
Thank you. I'll pass
their wings.
Yeah, they'll love to hear that.
Yeah, that's.
But yeah, that was the same thing as like I don't want to just race girls. I want to race whoever's the best, and I want to just like, you know, compete in like the real competition. And I think that's been, in terms of like, to win my seat, obviously I was competing against girls for my seat in on the Formula Women team, but then we're racing against just whatever the grid happens to be, which is mainly guys, but it's been a very cool process, and I appreciate the like opportunity I've been given to race.
That's does this give you exposure to other series, or are you all in GT LMP2?
Plan would be, I'm pretty committed to the GT3 route, or the GT route, just because that's what I'm used to. That's also what I have always been drawn to in terms of like, I love watching Formula One, but in terms of myself, like, I was like, single seaters kind of missed the boat. I want to do sports car racing. And so the goal would be to race in the UK this next year and then move on to like European GT4. I'd love if we raced in North America, brought it back home a bit, you know, do like the North American circuit. But the other thing would be to switch over into doing more endurance events, because those are the biggest ones, is when you start getting into endurance racing, and that's obviously a different ballgame when you're having to race for like 12, 24 hours or something like that. Like, it's a very next level of what's needed in terms of your team, in terms of you as a driver, like you're driving through the night, like all these things. And it's just another test of pushing your abilities and your control. And it's a long race. It's a lot can happen. So there's a lot of possibilities within the GT route, which is what I want to pursue.
Is it better in Europe than North America? I mean, is that where the real opportunities exist?
Hard to say. There's definitely opportunities both. There's IMSA in the States, which has tons of cool things. You can
go
to a bunch of different tracks, and they have quite a high level. I would say IMSA is like up there. There's the European stuff as well. There's not as much stuff in Canada. Like, we do have a few, like, IMSA comes to Toronto for, like, a part of their season, but I would say either are pretty legit. Like, you can, it's not that there's one is drastically below or above the other.
So IMSA is the equivalent of GT in North America? Like, I'm familiar with IMSA. I get that.
Yeah, so IMSA runs same kind of things. You can run GT4 at Daytona, that kind of thing. Yeah, so IMSA would be higher than, like, the series I'm in right now, just, like, a higher caliber in terms of, like, the drivers and, like, the professionalism and everything, but same kind of cars.
Okay, you should definitely do that.
It's the goal. I just need some more funding.
There you go. Well, this show is going to make you a celebrity, and...
Perfect.
They're going to come bang on your door. And I'll send you email addresses.
Perfect.
That's how it works. Who handles that for you? Do you have a manager? Is that your dad, your sister?
So Formula Woman does some of that for us, and then I do a lot of it myself as well, in just terms of marketing and, like, meeting different companies and brands. And also, it's like, it's me that's going to end up working for them in a sense, because if someone sponsors me, I'm then working for them, right? So I'm trying to help their company get the exposure, get the market engagement, get, like, the audience that they're wanting. So I like to be involved in that process and, like, know who I'm getting involved with, what they're wanting, to be able to create, like, the best partnerships. And also, like, I really appreciate our sponsors that we've had this past year and everything. Like, we've had Trade Center UK, which was our title sponsor this past year, and getting to know the people in that organization and everything. And obviously I care a lot about them because I'm doing what I'm doing because of them. So I want to help them in terms of what they're trying to achieve within their business. And then also just, like, I care about people and having a good relationship with the people you're working with. And in terms of, like, even smaller sponsorships, I've had Apex V2R, which is, like, that first company I started working with here in Canada, and they still support me in the little ways that they can, and I still support them. And I just really appreciate having those, like, strong relationships, and that's just a core priority for myself as a person. So I'm pretty involved in terms of connecting with the different potential sponsors and everything.
Do you do all your own marketing?
Yeah, at this point I run my own Instagram. I give my sister my camera, and I do my own emails and, you know, make my own website and everything. Formula Woman does their own marketing to a degree, but they're also, like, dealing with a large scale operation with a lot of different people and a lot of drivers. So a lot of the personal stuff is just me being like, okay, let's try to make a reel or something.
I was actually going to ask you, you did your own website?
Yes, I did.
Good job.
Thank you. My own photos of, like, I got my teammate to take a photo of me on my camera and then put it on the website and everything, but...
That's so I mentioned earlier, we have a family marketing agency. So, like, our whole world revolves around social media and marketing and whatnot. And so I pay close attention to that. I'm not amazing at it, but I know a good website because I have to look at them all the time and then say what's wrong with it. So,
well, give me some tips on what's wrong with my website.
I don't think there's anything wrong with it, but we could certainly give you tips.
Thank you.
Do you use TikTok and...
I do. To be honest, I was, like, a little cringed out with TikTok. I was like, oh, I don't know what to do. So I think I have, like, 5 things posted on TikTok. But I've realized, like, you know what? Like, the whole social media thing, at the start, I was, like, a little uncomfortable with it. I was like, I'm not, like... a pro driver, like, do people really care? Like, I feel, like, awkward being like, look at me and what I'm doing. But then, first off, I realized, like, well, you have to post what you're doing if you want to get any kind of following, if you want to get any kind of sponsorship, if you want to be in the car. And I want to be in the car, so I'm gonna take the photos, you know? And then also realizing, like, people really aren't judging you to this, like, harsh degree, being like, why on earth would she post that? Like, people are like, oh, that's cool, she won this competition. Like, people are... At least to me, I know, like, everyone talks about how cruel, like, online world can be, but people are pretty nice to me and are genuinely interested in just, like, following racing. So I've gotten more realize like it's part of the game and less awkward about posting stuff. But I still need to work on my TikTok game.
Yeah, so I use my son. So again, I was the anti-TikTok parent. It's like, oh, it's Chinese spying. Like, that's stupid. Yeah. You shouldn't do it. And and then it has a really healthy motorsports community. And, you know, and I think at least for this podcast, that's what I've sought after is where do the healthy communities lie? And, you know, where can you go showcase what you do? And I think for your world, like LinkedIn, I mean, that's where business owners live. You know, and they want to see eyeballs, which is where Instagram and TikTok reside. Facebook is kind of overrun. You have to spend a lot of money to get exposure from it. But short form video has taken over the world. And, you know, nobody wants to see static images anymore. You know, TikTok is now Gen Z and Gen X is number one search engine. So they don't use Google, they use TikTok for information. And that gets you the eyeballs. For me, YouTube and TikTok and LinkedIn are where I kind of live. I have everything else, but it's just kind of a mirror of those platforms.
Right.
And people want authenticity in your story. It's important that you get out there and tell the world who you are and what you're doing, because otherwise they have no idea where to send their sponsor dollars.
So. Fair point.
So we'll talk after the show about all that.
Okay, fantastic.
I always try to help with the marketing end of, because you guys drive really fast and obviously you make a great website. So maybe you have a second career there.
Thank you.
And then you can go on.
There we go.
So you also work for an NGO?
Yeah. So the other part of like my parents being cool and like letting me go race cars. And obviously my mom is a little stressed. She's like, I don't love the races you're in. I love it when it's over and you're home safe and then I can rewatch it and enjoy it. But my parents have always been very great at like letting us, you know, have freedom. So I've done a lot of work, for this peace organization that works in conflict regions around the world. So I've mainly done work on the Syrian border and, pretty much you work with people coming out of, conflict regions. It's awful, the stories you hear, in terms of just the pain and suffering and the loss and just these real situations that people are in. But then it's honestly very humbling and very like a privilege to get to be in those situations. And a lot of times they just need someone to listen. They just need support. Especially like if you've grown up your whole life and your world for the last few years has been a lot of pain, a lot of suffering. Everyone's dealing with loss. Like your dad's been killed, your brother's been killed. You've undergone torture, this or that. Like you don't really have someone to share your burdens in the sense of you're like, okay, well, my sister's also been in the same situation. So it's hard. You don't want to burden other people with stuff. So sometimes it's good just to feel seen or to feel heard or that other people in the world like care and they see your struggle. That's something that like a lot of people in conflict regions will just feel like ignored or forgotten by the world. Like we've been suffering for so long. They don't know how to, they'd have no resources to change things anymore. And to just be like, we need help. So to have people from other countries be able to like join with them and just like sit with them and hear their stories and like show them that they're not alone. And then what my organization does is really work on just providing the tools for locals to make the change that they want to in their community. So in terms of instead of just being like, okay, like here's our solution to this problem. It's more like, okay, go like be with the people, help the locals how they want to implement change in their community, provide them the resources they want. They know their community the best. They know what to do. They see the areas that need help and how can we just funnel resources and support them in that.
So you travel to the Syrian border?
Yes.
Really?
I have a few times, yeah. One of the times was like right after the attempted military coup happened in Turkey, and it was like pretty sketchy, not gonna lie. But I'm a Christian. I felt like I couldn't say I believed what I believed and not, you know, not back it up. So, and I was like, well, this is what I'm passionate about. This is what I believe. And sometimes things are more important than your personal safety in terms of, like, the greater cause. And I was also like, tons of other people are suffering all the time. And they undergo much more danger than I am. And I'm not, I don't take that trivially in terms of like putting yourself in a dangerous position. But at the time, like, I prayed a lot about it and I was like, this is worth, some things are worth more than my safety.
Yes, we're also Christians and we've done a lot of work in Guatemala.
Oh, nice.
And so, you know, we've taken our kids from a very young age to be around that. I think, you know, obviously to go serve, but also perspective, you know, like, hey, life isn't about iPhones and iPads and video games and, you know, Starbucks and all the creature comforts that we have. It's like people actually strive for a meal, you know, a meal a week or a meal, you know, ever. And
I
think it's important, you know, for like our own journey to really realize that there's so much more important stuff out there in the world. And it really, I think, helps you as a professional not get caught up in stuff that doesn't matter. You know, you just kind of really keep your eye on the prize and keep driving forward, and you're not really distracted by stupid stuff. But like, I agree with you. There's this thing here and, that we used to do with our youth group and it's Passion. So it's in Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, and, yeah. The conference thing.
Yeah. For college kids. And so we'd always take like 50 kids a year to this event.
Nice.
And one year we were there, and this has nothing like a Syrian government coup, but we went and everybody got sick. So like we had to get extra hotel rooms to quarantine off people.
Oh,
this is
no.
like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, but everybody was, you know, they were in a moment, they were having an experience. And like, I just like, I remember these young kids that my wife and I were with and like, you know, A, everybody's getting sick. So everybody's like terrified to like get near anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And there were these two kids like standing there, like looking like, I don't know, they just needed a hug, you know? Mm-hmm. So I walked over and like gave them a hug and, you know, my wife's like, oh my God, you're crazy. What are you doing? And I was like, look, I was like, I got to drive the bus home. So like, if I get sick, nobody's going to get home and I'm protected here. So like, I'm good.
There you go.
Like I never got sick. And I just like, I always remember that. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you said the story of like, hey, look, I'm going to Syria. And if I'm in danger, I have protection and I'm going and you know, I'm all good. And here you are.
Yeah.
Totally safe.
Yeah. There we go. It worked out. Yeah. I think it was hard in that situation. Cause like, sometimes you really feel like, you know, God's provision in certain situations. And then in this one, I felt like I needed to go, but he didn't give me like confirmation of like, okay, you'll be safe. It'll be fine. Whereas in other times you've been like, okay, this is fine. I can take this risk. This was just like, this is what I want you to do no matter what the cost is. And my poor mom, but, at that point it was like, well, also the safest place to be is like, where God wants you to be is in the center of his will. So I was like, you know what? This is more important than me being physically safe right now. And also like I've learned so much. I felt like there was so, like I gained so much perspective, like what you're talking about. And I think that's another thing that helps in terms of now being in motorsports and that world of just so much wealth, so much like it's money on money on money. It's insane. And so sometimes you can be like, oh, like, I don't have that much money. I can't do what these people are doing. But then you're like, okay, but in the grand scheme of the world, like, I am so fortunate. I have so many rights. I have so much safety. I have so much going for me. And I think one thing that I, like, personally have done for years, which I don't know when I started doing this, but I just, like, think probably, like, once a week or something, like, what if I just, like, was born in the slums of India? What if I was born in a remote village which didn't speak English and nobody else spoke this language and I was, like, isolated? Like, I just put myself in terms of, like, the position I'm in is extremely, extremely fortunate, and I think that helps me live my life better. Like, it helps me be grateful, be more at peace, be more content, and then also, like, then when you look at all these people who you're, I feel like we always look up and we don't look down. We always look at who has more than me, yep. But if you look at who has less than me, it's, like, pretty much everyone. Like, we're living in an extremely fortunate time, so, that helps in terms of when you're like, oh, I can't race the McLaren. You're like, okay, well, most people can't have food. So, Erica, suck it up, you know? Yeah. So it's a good perspective.
Yes. You just won a huge competition and you're driving a $1 million sports car. You're good.
Yeah, exactly. You're good. Exactly.
So in your brief moment of motorsports, what has been your pinch me moment?
Well, I think there's been a lot. One moment I had was in our second race weekend, we're at Olton Park, and I was at that time, like, the first race we were, like, on the pace, but near the back of the field. And then this next race, I was, like, battling people. So I was, like, in, like, kind of a battle with this guy, and I, like, knew I was faster than him at certain points. He was faster than me at other points. So I was like, hey, where do I get by? And then GT3s were coming through to lap. So I was like, I used them. I was like, this is going to be my play. And I, like, slipped up the inside with the GT3s on this guy and I passed him. And then I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, I'm a race car driver. I was like, I had this moment down the straight where I was like, that was sick. I was like, we're battling. I'm passing. I was like, is this real? I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm beating people. Cause again, very early in my motorsports career, I had way less practice. I was like wanting to survive the race. Obviously I wanted to win, but in a realistic sense, wanted to survive the race. And then I was making passes and battling people. And then I had this like, oh my gosh moment. And then I was like, okay, Erica, focus. Like, you're still in the race. And then that was like a real like freak out, like happy moment where I just like snapped into this, like, this is real life. And then was like, okay, back to racing, back to focus.
Isn't that a good feeling? I'm not a race car driver, but I do. My son and I, when we travel, we go to go-kart tracks and, mm-hmm. you know, and we race. And, you know, when you pass somebody, it's like, it's almost like you're putting it, you've found a puzzle piece. Because there's so much.
Yeah.
It's not just passing them on the highway. You know, they're actually trying to block you and,
yeah.
you know, take your line away from you. And it's a pretty incredible feeling. Those of you who have never raced before, go try it.
Yeah, it's really satisfying, especially when you like plan it out beforehand and you're like, okay, this is gonna be my move, and then it actually works. You're like, that was sick, that just feels so good.
I love it. What didn't you expect about motorsports?
What didn't I expect? I think I'd been trying to like get involved in motorsports for a while, so I had a decent like outside, I had a decent perspective going into it, but I think just like there's a lot of things involved. It's not like just your driving, right? You're driving such a slim percentage of what your workload is and what your expectations are. And as much as you want to hope like, okay, we're just going to train for driving all the time, that's not my reality in my life at all. And my friends are like, oh yeah, so you're just like practicing driving. I'm like, actually I get like a very sliver of a moment like for your driver, your actual on track practice. It's a lot of pre-work in terms of getting yourself prepared the best to make the use of that track time. And then just a lot of like media, a lot of marketing, a lot of conversations, a lot of sponsorship stuff, a lot of just paperwork and emails and all those kind of things. Cause as much as we want to like hope that just like, okay, it's just the fastest people get the seats, it's not. It's the people who have the right connections and who went to the right things and who knew the right people and were in the right place at the right time. So there's a lot of logistics in terms of motorsport, which I knew, but it's just like, once you're in it, you're like, oh man, this is more other work than I thought it would be.
I really think that people fail to realize that motorsports is a business. You know, mm-hmm. they think it's like Hollywood, but it's just a business. And it's so much selling and, you know, communicating and storytelling. And then you have to go race and be the fastest.
Yeah.
But there's so much involved with, you know, keeping sponsors happy, educating them. And I think the sponsors that I've ever run into, they just want to be a part of the story. Like mm-hmm. they're not, they may say, you know, I want to enter a European market, so I want to put my logo on your car, you know, but they're really, they want to walk a journey with you, especially like in your situation. They want to be on Team Erica and they want to watch you take this journey to the top and be able to say like, hey, we were a part of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we got to see that out and then walk side by side and tell that story from our business, because content's really hard, really, really difficult to come up with. And when you can say, you know, rather than, hey, look at this widget we just built, or hey, here's a picture of a field with our logo on it, like nobody pays attention to that. But when they're like, hey, we're supporting this driver and we're walking side by side and every month we're giving an update of her story, like that's mm-hmm. that's valuable content that people want to pay attention to. So
thank you,
kudos. So what advice do you have for young women seeking a career in motorsports?
Mm-hmm. I would say, first off, like, it sometimes feels intimidating to get involved with, or you don't know where to start, especially something like motorsports, which is just an industry which, if you aren't previously connected to it, it can feel, like, hard to break in. Like, how do I, like, connect into this world? So I would say just go for it. First off, like, try to contact as many people as you can. Like, I got into things through, like, emailing people, and then the right person was like, sure, come meet me, and so I would just reach out to as many people as you can. And then also, like, if you're wanting to drive, I would say, like, just drive. Like, I think a lot of times we have this expectation, like, okay, I need, like, a fancy race car, or I need all this prep, or I need all these things before I can do something. But, like, my first car I took the track was a Hyundai Accent. Like, or I did autocross, which is pretty much $50. You go to a parking lot, they set up, like, pylons, and you do, like, performance driving around there. And a lot of times you can think like, oh, I need this fancy car, or I need more training, or this or that. And I would just encourage you to go and enjoy it. Like, for me, I was like, I want to do this because I love it and I want to do it for me. And to be honest, you're not going to make like a ton of money in motorsports. Well, it depends if you're in the right spot. But as a driver, like, that's not a good career path if you're wanting to make money. But if you're wanting to just have the opportunity to drive, I would just encourage you, anybody, to just do whatever they can and get on at any level, because you can still have just as much fun and be just as much invested and have a great time tracking with your own car, doing like low level races, than if all this money's on the line, you got a whole team backing you and you're doing these intense races. Like, I think the pure love of the sport is what matters. And like, I would just, wherever you're at, I would just encourage you to start and don't put qualifiers or excuses on why you're not ready for it. Just like, go and see how it goes, and just be humble, take advice, talk to people, and enjoy like the love of the sport.
Gosh, you're such an entrepreneur too. Like, you don't overthink it, just do it. That's always the hang up with anyone, is like, well, it's not the right time, it's not the right place, I don't have enough money, I don't have a fast enough car. It's like, just go.
Just do it. And I think that's something that I've learned throughout this process, is it could have been very easy for me throughout the Formula Woman process to be like, I'm not as qualified as these other people. I never did karting. I haven't been racing for all these years. I'm not ready for it. But I've learned, like, the people who make their dreams come true are the people who work to make their dreams come true and go after it. And also, like, that perspective of, like, well, why not me? Like, someone's going to have this opportunity, so why can't I have that opportunity? Why can't I put myself in the best position for that to happen to me, or for other good opportunities to come? And it's just kind of making yourself available. And the other thing I realized was, like, I was at the point where I was like, I'd much rather try and fail miserably at racing and know that I tried and have that peace and that, like, okay, that was a closed door. I'll move on than have the, like, but what if? Like, I never tried. I never gave it enough of a shot. So even in the past where I was like, I want to do racing, but I don't know how. I could just do this other thing, which would probably be more secure. I was like, okay, no, I'll look back years from now and be like, why didn't I finish that? Why didn't I see that to completion, or like at least see that to like utter failure, and then I could have peace and walk away and be like, hey, that wasn't for me, but that was fun. So that was kind of my mentality, is like, I'm going to pursue this, and as doors keep opening, I'm going to keep walking through and trust that God will put me where he wants to be. Or if it's not meant to be, then that's a closed door, and then I can have peace about it. But I feel like there's a lot of in the middle where you're like, I don't know. And it's really hard to take risks. But I also find that the hardest part about taking a risk is actually deciding to take the risk. And then the risk itself really isn't as hard. All of the hardest things or biggest decisions I've made that have had the biggest payoff in my life were always at the start being like, should I go to Syria? Should I try to pursue this? Should I reach out to this person and ask for this opportunity? And then you do it and it's like, fine. Like, it's really way less, like the actual thing is actually sometimes way easier than the asking or the deciding to step into the thing, if that makes sense at all.
It makes perfect sense. I mean, that's like the story of our life. You know, I think just doing it is the hardest part of it. And then even if it goes bad or it fails, it still stretches you.
Yeah.
Like sitting around watching TV all day doesn't grow you. Getting out there and going to Syria and having your life flash before your eyes and being terrified, like, you grow from that. You get a perspective, you take something away, and then you mm-hmm. come home and you're good. But, and you have a story to tell. Like, I always tell people, like, I want to be the old guy on my porch sitting in a chair with, like, stories to tell.
There you,
like,
go.
I love going to coffee shops and seeing, like, 5 or 10 old retired guys sitting at a table telling war stories of Vietnam or World War II. And you're just kind of like, man, these guys have had a really interesting life. You know,
yeah,
and I'm sure that those stories were horrific to go through. But, you know, it's a story to tell and an experience that you've had in life that makes you who you are. And you're not boring.
Exactly.
You're not boring either.
Oh, thank you.
You got a great story to tell.
Thank you. Well, yeah, life is short, and I think, like, obviously there's a difference between being foolish and chasing just trivial experiences and, like, not being smart about your life, but then there's also, like, you know, life is very short. Like, what do you want yours to be like? Like, I'd rather take some risks and have some failures and have to start over again 5 years behind other people, because what is behind, what is ahead, it doesn't, I feel like we get too caught up, especially at my age, in comparing yourself to other people and, like, oh, well, what are the markers that make a successful life? But it's much more important what your life feels like than what it looks like to other people. So I think it's worth it to just pursue what you want and just work hard and try to have a life that you are proud that you've lived at the end of it.
Success is gauged by forward momentum. That's it. Mm-hmm. It's that simple. So keep taking more steps. Erica, seriously, thank you for coming on the show. You're
all
a treat.
Right. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You're going to get a ton of sponsors from this.
Oh, thank you. <You're>... <can hope.
laughs> This is going to be good for you. I'm not taking any credit. You just have a great story to tell, a great personality, and I think that, you know, people just need to see that.
Aw, thank you. Well, I really appreciate your time with me today, and, like, it's interesting to hear your perspective, and I appreciate that this was more of a conversation than me just talking the whole time, although I did talk a lot because I...
That's good.
How to do that. But, this was really enjoyable, and I appreciate your time and your care with the interview and everything.
And when you are a big-time race car celebrity, you know, don't forget us small people down here.
Here we go. When you text me, I'll tell you to come to the pits this time. I'll be like, come on back.
Thank you. We need more people like you. Because I'm not going to ask, so.
Okay, I'll let you know.
That's always mean, so. Erica, thank you, seriously.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.